now. I gotta be on.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Walls in Our Minds. Today is anniversary for the Columbine shooting, and we've got a very interesting show tonight. Mr. Doug Millar will be calling in shortly. Hopefully, John DeCamp will be calling in. Right now, we've got a special guest, I believe, area code 207. You have a live mic. Would you announce yourself, please?
Gee, Terry, is that me? I'm not sure. I tried to mute out.
Is this Andrea?
No, this is Dottie. How do I mute out?
Dottie, you're live.
Star 6. I want the star 6 to mute out.
I'm not sure I understood what you said. I'm sorry.
I tried to mute out with star 6.
You actually have to hit a mute button on your phone with Blog Talk. It's not like a conference call.
Okay, but, it's not surf. All right, let me find the mute button, Terry. Okay, sorry.
Okay. Let's open up with a prayer. Is Dwayne on live yet, Dr. Kate? Dwayne is on. Dwayne, how about you open us with prayer? I'll close us if you'll open us.
All right. Thank you very much, Terry. Good to have you guys again. I'm excited for this this call. So I'm excited. I think our Father's bringing some wonderful things into our lives here. I'm just so excited. We're just talking about that on my call. So, Heavenly Father, oh, man, what an awesome, awesome creator you are. Wow, you're in charge. You sure are on the throne. I can just picture the Father up there just waving his hand, and all the movement in the universe just obeys and falls at his command. And, Father, we ask you now to take that mighty hand and bring it down in our direction. Father, we use your guidance as headlights, Father, to know which way to go, which way you would have us go to search out the people who need to know your glory, need to know your truth. Father, send us in any direction you would have us go, for nothing shall make us afraid. We love you, Father. We love your word. We love your Son. And with the power of your Holy Spirit, Father, we hope to do everything that you would ask us to do. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We thank you and ask you again to be with us, to be merciful upon us, giving us wisdom and guidance. In the name of your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach, hallelujah and hallelujah. Should I do another one?
Hello?
Hi.
Area code 603, you have a live mic.
Hi, this is Gus.
This is Doug?
Hello? No, this
hello?
Is Gus.
Gus, hello, Gus.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We missed you last evening. I understand you had other things tying you up. Glad to have you on with us. Do you have a report for us today regarding Mr. Miller?
Yes. I went and met with Bill around noon today, and Stella Tremblay and Tim Comerford also went. and we had a nice visit. And afterwards, I had a I brought some release of information forms for Bill to sign so that I can go to the probate court and pull his record, because it is a sealed record. And he signed those. We went to the probate court, and the lady there refused to allow us to see anything. She said that a motion had to be put in. The judge had to approve it. And I told her that the judge has no expectancy of privacy, that Bill's the only one who has that. And he specifically is demanding the information, and that we were there to pick it up. And she was pretty rude, pretty nasty. And so I spent about an hour while Tim and Stella waited patiently. And I made some phone calls, because I've dealt with these people before, and I had the phone numbers to the administrative offices of the courts, and let our demands be known that, you know, Bill's one of the people. He deserves to have his rights protected, and they're being abused right now. So that's what
you know,
we did
Gus,
today.
Gus, for our listeners, I just want them to know that you're talking about the fellow that's been incarcerated up in New Hampshire, the candidate for sheriff, William Miller, Billy Miller, that you're referring to. I should have given some precedence before I just turned you loose there. But I just wanted to get you guys on. I was also expecting Dwayne. Is Stella going to call in?
She hasn't returned my call. I'm not sure if she will or not.
Okay. Well, maybe you can give a little report on what happened with Representative Trimbley.
I don't know. Gus is the only one that knows at this point. I don't have it. Andrew might have some news, but I don't have it myself. Not tonight.
Okay. Was Gus there today with the, Representative Trimbley?
Yes.
Yes, I was there. I went there at noon today to get this signed, some releases signed for that court information to be released. And when I got there, Bill informed me that Stella was on her way up, and Stella also invited Tim Comerford. So we ended up all getting there within 15 minutes of each other, and we spent a couple hours together talking about what to do. And from there, we decided the first thing to do was to get the records from the probate court. So we went to probate court to demand those. I'm going to follow up on that on Monday.
Well, I understand that you actually got to have lunch with Billy.
Yeah, I visit him every 2 or 3 days, spend an hour or so with him.
But the representatives were there for that.
Yeah, Stella went to Subway today, picked up a few grinders of various sorts and brought them up, and we just hung out, and it was nice. It was a nice visit.
So they got an opportunity to really kind of get to know him today.
Well, Tim Comerford has been, Marie Miller, in New Hampshire we have a redress committee, and Marie Miller filed a petition for redress last year regarding her mortgage. And the bank that was foreclosing on her and doing so illegally. And the redress committee heard that petition, and Tim Comerford was Marie Miller's sponsor in that petition. So Tim Comerford has known the family for quite some time. He's very familiar with, you know, who they are. Bill Miller's brother John, and, you know, the whole series of events over the last couple of years.
Well, we were certain. I know I was impressed last night with Tim Comerford's report of what he did and said at that hearing yesterday. That was outstanding.
Yes. Yes, it was.
What do you think is going to happen at this point? Do you think that they're getting enough pressure on them at this point that they're going to let him out?
Well, they were visibly shaken yesterday. There was a lady that represented the hospital. She's the attorney. And we were demanding to be in the room. The room was a I'm in construction. I rebuild and remodel office spaces. And so I'm very familiar with sizes. And that room was approximately 18 feet wide by 30 feet deep. And they said that only 6 or 7 people could go into that room. And there was plenty of room for people to be in there. I've been in hearings with the state legislature where it's wall-to-wall people, and we're all dying of heat, and we all stay in there for the hearings. And these are all the same people that are used to being in those stuffy circumstances. So we were all looking at that room thinking, you're out of your tree. You know, there's plenty of room for everybody to be in there. And they finally broke down and allowed one of the reps to be in there. But it was kind of ridiculous. It was an administrative hearing to find out if the process had been followed, which was necessary for bringing Bill into, you know, back to the hospital. It wasn't a hearing before the court. And so I'm not sure what their policies are, but, you know, Bill is not subject to policy. He's one of the people. He's not an employee of the state. So, you know, we all have our different views on what's right and wrong in that respect.
Well, our first guest regarding Columbine is on live with us at this time, so we're going to have to break away from the Billy Miller situation and go to that. But before we do that, I want to make sure if there's any other comments that Gus or Andrea or Dwayne or even Red, if you have a comment related to the Billy Miller situation, let's wrap that up. Anybody got a comment?
Well, I'd just like to thank you all for your support of Bill and other people that are doing, you know, what Bill's doing, standing up for the rights of the people. You guys are fantastic, and we certainly appreciate you being there.
Well, we appreciate what's going on up there, and this is an important situation because any one of us could be next. Any one of us could be next. And the things that we're talking about tonight is very much related to this. There's a huge spiritual battle going on out there. And whenever you try to, it's like the Ron Paul statement about truth is treason in the empire of lies. And that's what that's why Billy Miller became treasonous to the corruption up there, because he started revealing the truth. And, you know, any of us who are keeping God at the top of our pecking order is subject to this kind of an attack. And so with that, anybody else want to make a final comment? I'm going to bring Doug Millar on here.
I have none. No, go ahead.
Well, welcome, Doug Millar, to Walls in Our Minds.
Well, thank you. So appreciate Terry and Red to have us on tonight. We have an exciting program for 2 hours on the Columbine cover-ups, crimes, criminals, and cover-ups. Going from the local law enforcement people all the way up to the White House and the FBI, as well as the Department of Justice. And so I'm so excited that you got Johnny Camp on. Thank you for being persistent.
Well, Doug, give our listeners, you know, they're familiar with a lot of things, but I doubt very many of them are familiar with the Columbine situation other than just what they heard in national news. And obviously, there was a lot of cover-up. There was a lot of things going on behind the scenes, a lot of things surrounding that situation and preceding that situation that has never really come out except through some of the efforts of you and John DeCamp and some of the others in the Denver area and some deep researchers. And a lot of this has been squelched. The media was shut down on it. I know that tonight I'm hoping that you're going to be able to share with us some of the things that you've learned that have never been disclosed anywhere, really, other than perhaps today that in some of what you've done. So I'm going to give you the floor, but I'd like for you to kind of slow walk it, kind of back it up, kind of set the stage, if you will, so that these listeners will have a little bit of a clue where you're coming from.
Okay, well, first I'd like to introduce two dear friends of mine, Mark Taylor, who was the first student shot at Columbine, had, and we talked about him briefly, had 7 bullets hit him and 13 holes. One bullet stayed in his body, and he's a walking miracle to be alive because of the fact that he laid there for well over an hour. It should have bled to death in the first half hour, but he was praying to God. He's a Christian, born again Christian. He'd been going to a Christian school for, actually, how many years, Donna? Okay, well, anyway, I want to introduce also his mother here, Donna Taylor. She has not been able to work the last 13 years because of the traumas that he suffered and her demanding justice for not only her son, but everybody that was shot and murdered at Columbine. Because, of course, and all the students there were victims in one way or another because they were so traumatized. Many of them left the school. They didn't go back in the fall when they started up again. So anyway, let's see. I guess I should start out by just stating that, first of all, I want to ask, is John DeCamp going to be on tonight?
You're asking me?
Yes.
I had gotten word he was going to be on, and then when you told me earlier that his wife said because of the back injury he had that that may not be possible, I haven't heard any more since then. You were going to call, so.
Well, yes, we did call, and Donna, do you want to mention about John DeCamp? You talked to him this morning.
You could give him a call. He'll come on. You need to hear from you, the radio show.
You have a cell phone, correct, Terry?
I do, but it's difficult for me to make calls while I'm on the show because I'm on Skype on the computer.
Okay, maybe you can get somebody else to do it just because I can't do it since I'm, you know, we got my two cell phones lined up here, Donna. Maybe you might try it. Okay, Donna is going to go in another room and call him. But, you know, that was maybe when we got that report from his wife, that was actually more like 30 hours ago. And then Donna, of course, has talked to him today. I've missed him. But he said he would come on tonight with us, so that's exciting. But anyway, he represented Mark Taylor. But before we get into that, maybe we should give a little more background. These two students, and we encourage you to go to a website that has all this evidence on the website. It's Ron Eggner's. He spent a lot of money having someone put this together for him. It's called Columbine Family Request. .com. And you'll see videos on there with Mark Taylor speaking out at news conferences, how articulate he was. And now he's been virtually taken off the streets, kidnapped by law enforcers, drugged against his will. And he's now fighting back for the fifth time to get off the drugs. But we got the mysterious problem because each time they drug him, he comes back not quite the same as he went in. So,
is that website's .org, is it not?
Oh, maybe that's my mistake.
ColumbineFamilyRequest.org, I believe.
Oh, thank you, Terry. Appreciate that. I'm going to grab my flyer because I've been promoting that website for obvious reasons. And, so anyway, if anybody puts it in Columbine Family Request, they'll be able to find it because it'll give you the different proper ones. So I'm glad you corrected me on that one. Now, as far as what happened, because I had been investigating at that time, remember the Columbine happened on April the 20th, 1999. At that time, I had already been investigating CIA mind control of creating Manchurian candidates to go into these schoolyards and kill people for the last 7 years full-time in several states. And I never have charged my investigations. But what was so significant was that a bunch of us teamed up together when we found that children were being used in torture and murder films in Santa Rosa, California, and in Sonoma County, where Bohemian Grove is. And we were so horrified that we decided to team up together and build a group called Loving Intervention for Our Nation's Kids. But personally, I didn't like that because kids are goats, and whatever you tell a child, they become that. So you got to be very careful what you say to children. So I, about a year and a half later, I formed Loving Intervention for Our Nation's Children as my own organization. But we have an amazing situation here because of the fact, remember back in the 1960s and 70s, there were so many people going to post offices where they worked, and in most cases, and killing strangers, friends of theirs, their supervisors. The term was coined going postal. I'm sure most of you have heard that term more than once, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened was that then the whole goal of the CIA of creating these people, and it's all documented in John DeCant's book. I tell everybody, John DeCant's book is the most important book written in your and my lifetime, because he was told by the head of the CIA, who was his mentor, after Bill Colby was fired. They'd been friends for 25 years before Colby was kidnapped, tortured, and murdered, and with a bullet in his head, they said he capsized in his canoe and drowned. So when they can take out a CIA director, they can take out President Kennedy and try to almost kill President Reagan, we know we have serious problems in our country. And they use these people, mind control victims, all the time. So now back on the Columbine to focus on is these two boys. You can go to that website I mentioned, Columbine Requests, Family Requests, and you'll find that those boys were sodomized. First, they were arrested by Deputy Sheriff Kim Walsh, W-A-L-S-H, because they'd broken into a van and stolen about $1,000 in electronic equipment. And, you know, I did some crimes when I was a high school kid in punk, too, so a lot of people... Okay, so bottom line is that for the grace of God, it could have been me, you know. But I was never caught. My two best friends were spent 5 years apiece right here in Colorado. That says they were sentenced to 5 years apiece in a federal juvenile reform school right here in Jefferson County where Columbine is. But anyway, the result of all this is that these government officials are creating mind control sex slaves as children who are drug runners, drug dealers. They don't know they're working for the CIA, of course. They're under mind control. They have using altered personalities. And so when you sodomize a child, they usually pick children between the ages of 2 and 4. That's the best time. They pick high IQ children who, I should say, they know their parents have high IQs, good-looking parents, so they know the children are going to be good-looking. And so they create these people who, most of the gorgeous women you see now as prostitutes, you can go to, for example, I was in Las Vegas, you can go there and look in the Yellow Pages. At one time I saw 200 pages of escorts because prostitution is illegal. What a joke. And because they want to have that family atmosphere. But a high percent of those weight ladies have mobile personalities and were sodomized by either their father or grandfather, uncle, and they have mobile personalities.
Doug, sometimes when you're so close to something like you have been for so many years, it's almost difficult, I know, for me when I'm that close to something to explain things to somebody else that comes across clear. For example, you said they were sodomized. I'm not sure the listeners know who you're talking about was sodomized.
Well, I'll let you describe that. I don't want to describe it.
Well, it was the shooters. It was the kids that committed the crime that had been sodomized, correct?
Exactly. And they both had to go to the therapist because of it and get it on drugs.
Now when did that happen? Did that happen before the shooting?
It happened 15 months beforehand. They call it the January incident in their correspondence with each other, and it's all on Ron Agner's website. And they've already had over a million hits on his website and the one that he's working with another group called the Columbine Research Task Force website. So I encourage you to go to both of those.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, so I hope I didn't
break
your fall.
No, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did because, you know, you're right. I've been working with this stuff for 20 years, and so I try to help people understand that these kids going to schools is not a random act. most of them, not all of them, of course, because some of them are copycats now. Remember the first day that the Columbine happened, someone in the audience gave his, on TV, he was interviewed, he gave a phony name, no one ever heard of him before. He claimed he was a basketball player, and of course he wasn't, but he got on the national news that the two killers were targeting jocks, athletes, because they've been abused by these people. And so now for the last 13 years, a lot of copycats have taken place because they felt like they were being abused. Well, jocks have been abusive to nerds and a lot of people in school. I can remember when I was in school, in junior high and high school, they got quite offensive to a lot of people, including me. And so the bottom line is, we didn't go out and shoot anybody because that's, but it's the mind control that creates those Manchurian candidates to go out and commit these crimes in most cases. So, do you have any questions about what I've covered so far, or should I continue?
I think you're doing great. Thank you. Keep going.
Okay. So, what is shocking is that when different people sodomize a child, little boy, or little girl, or they torture them, these altered personalities, some people have, you know, just two or three, some have two or three dozen, some have 200 or 300 alters. They have these memories of what happened to them. And as we learned the hard way in talking to many of these victims over the last 20 years, I've been at full time, in over 20 states, we find that these people have, and John explains it very well in his book, The Family Cover-Up. And so you can go online now and read it. He sold over 300,000 copies of his book without spending a dime on advertising. And so I urge everybody to go ahead and go online now. You can read it for free. If you want a copy, you can order it through Amazon. As I understand, Amazon is the only one willing to sell it now because, or allowed to sell it because, and that doesn't make sense, but if you were to go and call your favorite bookstore and ask them to, you want to order the latest issue of the Family Cover-Up because it goes into Columbine and exposes what happened there in some detail. And it said, DeCamp was very specific there, but I'm not going to get into that in detail right now. I just want to give you a little overview and encourage people. If you want to save your children and your grandchildren, if you want to save your assets, as well as if you want to save America, you have to read that book, or you're going to have your loved ones someday say, why didn't you warn us about what was coming down? What did you do to help save America when all these laws were being passed on a violation of the Constitution? A lot of people listening, if they don't help us, they're going to wish they did because their loved ones are going to have contempt for them for not helping. Because you know what it is? When the Lord allows us to learn something, there's a reason for it. He expects us to do something about it. Wouldn't you agree, Terry?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
I said, when the Lord allows us to learn of these kind of crimes, he expects us to go out and do something about it. That knowledge, he awakens certain people. Not everybody's awake because the media is so controlled. So don't you think that, wouldn't you agree that the Lord expects us to go out and do something once we learn about these kind of crimes? And cover
well,
up?
Red, who's listening, he keeps saying that it's important to be available. When God is going to use you, you got to be available. And
exactly.
so often he provides us with opportunities, and we twiddle our thumbs, or you know, and then we have some 20/20 hindsight about it. And you know, I have to admit, Doug, that there's so many times in my life that he provided opportunities that I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And some of the greatest experiences that I've had in my life, some of the most productive moments that I've had in my life, was just because I was available for him to use me.
Quite sure. And you never know what's going to happen. Sometimes it happens in the most unusual circumstances. Sometimes you meet a stranger. It turns the light on for you, and you realize, I've got to do something about that. Or at least you should feel that way. So, back to Columbine. Rhett, glad you're there. Thank you so much. You're a real hero of mine. I had a privilege of meeting you when you spoke at the Free Enterprise Society's 4th of July event in the San Jose area, in Alameda County, as I recall. And that was back in 1995. I introduced myself to you and told you you were one of my heroes at that time. And so back on the focus here on the Columbine. So when Columbine happened, because I've been investigating these kind of crimes now for the last 7 years, many of us all across the country knew about the Franklin cover-up and knew about the creation of Manchurian candidates. We knew that this was a government operation. These kids were going out killing other children, and they were probably under mind control. And of all things, I started buying 5 papers a day. I was reading the 2 Las Vegas papers, of course, dailies, because I want to follow the Columbine and see what, because quite often you only see something one time on TV or one time in an article, and you never hear about it again. And so the other 3 papers was, of course, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and USA Today, which is now the largest paper in America, much bigger than New York Times. Why? Because they expose more of the truth. They help expose mind control by promoting Noreen Gosh's book and her articles that she wrote, many articles for them, and her attorney, John DeCamp. Her son kidnapped when he was only 12 years old in West Des Moines, Iowa, back in 1982, way back there. And one of the first children kidnapped in America that is suspected to be a network of people. And then I give you this background because it's going to tie back in with Columbine. People need to understand that Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, the Satanist who was Army Special Forces CIA officer during the Vietnam War, just like DeCamp was, but one was willing to, DeCamp was willing to go out and tell the truth, exposing Aquino and his network. And Aquino has a location right here in Colorado, or at least they did when he kidnapped people he had other people kidnap people. He didn't do it himself. He paid for the kidnaps of the children. And he did that with Johnny Gosch. And I encourage everybody to go to that website. That is very important. JohnnyGosch.com. I'll spell it for you. We all know how to spell Johnny with 2 N's, but Gosch is a little unusual. GOSCH.com. And so John DeCamp represents Johnny's mother. And the reason he doesn't represent the father is because the father also has multiple personalities. And of course, Noreen didn't know that when she married him. And she married 2 Marines, had 2 children, I think, with one, and then married the second one, and he had multiples. And she didn't learn about it until after Johnny was kidnapped at age 12 on his paper route. But he's still alive. Okay, so I give you this background because DeCamp has been on the cutting edge in the forefront, risking his children, his wife, himself, and let me assure you that he's had death threats. And the reason he moved out of Lincoln, Nebraska was because one time someone drove up to his daughter's out in front and had a little puppy out there with her. The man got out of his car, stamped the puppy to death, and told the little girl, if you tell your daddy, if he doesn't shut up, this is going to happen to you and the family. So DeCamp, obviously smart enough, the reason he wrote that book is because Bill Colby told him he had to protect the lives of his family because he knew too much about the CIA mind control. And so DeCamp decided to write that book. And see, during the Vietnam War, Bill Colby is head of the CIA he was first vice ambassador to Saigon, which meant he was in charge of CIA's operations for not just the Vietnam War, but throughout Southeast Asia. Eventually, he became the head of the CIA and appointed, as I recall, by Nixon. And so then, of course, he went to Congress at a U.S. Senate hearing, and he told them too much about the CIA mind control, that the CIA was mad. Kissinger, then, as soon as Gerry Ford was replaced, Nixon, as you know, he was the first, I think, unelected president we've ever had in our country's history, at least in the 20th century. And so Kissinger, having helped put Ford in power, who is Speaker of the House, out of he was actually a Jew named Gold, out of in Michigan, working for the mafia. But so he changed the name from Gold to Ford, because obviously Ford is a very popular product being manufactured in that state, and nationwide it was a popular thing. So Ford fired Kissinger, one of his first acts when he became president. And of course he so I give his background because people need to understand that we have two factions with our government. One is the good white hats that want to keep us under the Constitution, protect our country, and the others are trying to conquer America, enslave us, take all our guns, and put us under a one-world dictatorship under the United Nations called the New World Order. Now, back to the how this ties in with Columbine is because when you read that book, you'll see how they create mind-controlled slaves like these children. And today, of all things, I'm going to just give you a little aside. I had someone call me that I'd never heard from before, and I didn't recognize his name, but when he started telling me about how he was a victim of Aquino, and that just like Johnny Gosch was, of course, and just like Paul Benassi, the key witness, the Franklin cover-up book. And so the result was that they were tortured and mind-controlled by Aquino, forced to murder children. Okay, I won't get into all the gory detail about it because it's just too sickening to even hear. But they didn't kill one child, they killed many children, and they also practiced satanic cannibalism on these children.
Doug?
So, yeah.
Doug, I'm having just a little bit of trouble understanding you. You're loud enough, you're plenty loud. Maybe just speak as clearly as you can, because I know that it's probably coming across. I think we're getting most of it, but there's some of it we're not quite understanding clearly.
Okay, thank you for telling me that. I'm holding the phone a little further away from me. Is that better?
I think if you just speak clearly, you'll be fine.
Okay, thanks. Well, I've got a problem because I have had 5 teeth pulled, and so I have always had too much saliva in my mouth, and now I can't control it, so it's because over the last 3 years since I had them pulled, my speech has gotten progressively worse. So I apologize for that. But so now they have this background on how the government creates children who are mind control victims, and they went from sending people who were mind control victims that worked in the post office because they couldn't handle the whole regular job in most cases. Then they couldn't get people to demand gun confiscation. So then they started sending adults into businesses and doing that. And that didn't work. And so then they started sending adults into schoolyards and killing children. And then, of course, those adults would pull out a pistol, use a 9mm, put it in their mouth, and they commit suicide. It's all part of their programming. And when that didn't work, then, of course, they decide, okay, we're going to start sending children in. And that's what they've been doing now for the last 20 years all across the country. And just yesterday, we had a bomb scare in a school just about 4 to 6 miles from Columbine. With the 7th grade students, you may have heard about on the news last night. But what happened was this student called and made a bomb threat, and they were able to track him down, and they raided his home, and found he did have bomb-making materials in his home, and he was planning on
putting bombs under the chairs of the jocks in junior high. Why? Because, of course, he was a copycat. Was he a mind control victim? Who knows? Why did he pick April the 19th? That's National Patriot Day. It has been for since the, you know, the revolutionary days. And, of course, the people that run our country didn't want to celebrate that because it celebrates independence and Second Amendment and free speech and everything. So now after President Bush Jr. became president and after 9/11, which is an inside job, using, of course, mind control victims again. I don't have time to get into that, but Bush, of course, went ahead and changed National Patriot Day to 9/11.
Doug?
What a travesty that is.
Doug?
Yes.
I think it's important for the listeners. When you just start talking about mind control, I don't think most people can grasp the extent of what we're talking about. And I
know it.
I started doing you know, substantial research on this 3 or 4 years ago myself.
Good.
And what really blew my mind was when I came across a lecture that was done by a psychiatrist out of Utah by the name of Hammond. His name was Cordon Hammond, and they called that the Green Bomb Lecture. And
exactly.
the reason they called it the Green Bomb Lecture was because Green Bomb was the name of the Nazi brainwasher that they brought over here and put to work in the CIA after World War II. And his name kept coming up during treatments of multiple personality disorder patients. The name Green kept coming up in all of them, and in thousands of them. And what Hammond did, there were psychiatrists literally all over the world who were not having any success treating these MPD, multiple personality disorder patients. And
exactly.
So they heard about Hammond, and what they would do is they would call up and they would say, "We understand you're having some success. You know, we've been trying to treat these people for a year and a half or 2 years, and we're getting nowhere." So what Hammond would do, because he had deciphered the program, this brain soiling, as Red calls it, he calls it brain soiling instead of brainwashing.
Brainwashing is totally different from mind control. There's a difference.
I understand.
But we won't get into that right now.
I understand. Yes, correct. But the point is that what they do in this, where you're talking about mind control, is they disassociate these people's minds, and they literally create multiple personalities all the way down to like 7 different levels. And this same methodology was being used ceremonially in some of these sex slave operations where they were doing this with these children. And it was happening all over, not just in the United States, not just in Colorado, but, you know, all over, especially out of Washington, D.C. and that part of the country. But what was happening was that these psychiatrists would call up Hammond and get in touch with Hammond, and Hammond would say, "Well, we'll use this word and ask this question, and then after you see what results you get, call me back and tell me what happens." He wouldn't tell them what to expect. So then the psychiatrist would go, "Oh, my God, this is the first time in all these sessions that I've ever broken through this person, and you just told me to mention one name or one word or one mythological god or something and ask a specific question, and all of a sudden my session is completely successful. I'm now able to penetrate this person, you know, multiple personalities. And how do you, you know, what's the magic here? How did you know this about a person you've never met?" Well, this was happening time and time and time again all over the world. They estimated that there was something like 10,000 people at least out there that had gone through this specific mind control disassociation operation. So this is the kind of scope that we're talking about here. We're not just talking about some little small isolated case with these kids. So I just wanted to contribute that, because I think the listeners need to understand we're not dealing with something that's isolated. We're dealing with something that is significant all over the world.
Exactly. And, you know, I, after the Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped there in 2002, I figured, of course, it was probably mind control, too, because we got a call. Johnny Campers got a call from her third cousin saying that, I bought your book 10 years ago. I read it. I was so horrified by it, I put it in the corner, and now 10 years later, I think the same people got my cousin, Elizabeth Smart. And so DeCamp and Dennis and I had a conference call on it, and they decided it would be best for me to go up there because they were too busy. And so I actually stayed with that third cousin for a few days, and then decided to go back to Denver here and pack up everything and move up there, because I knew that a lot of Mormons are, ever since I was 18, some of my best friends have always been Mormons. But up there, they have what they call, according to the third cousin's wife, an incest epidemic. And so there was a law in there, and if you sodomize and sexually abuse your daughter or son, or your grandparents do it to you, it's a misdemeanor. Think about it. You destroy a child's life, and it's a misdemeanor? That's how bad it is up there. And, of course, that's where Romney comes from, right?
Yes.
So, anyway, the bottom line is, speaking of Romney, I want to make sure everybody understands that many of the best talk shows you've ever heard around the country were on, obviously, gutsy stations that were willing to help expose the Franklin cover-up. And a group got together, and we were told that it was CIA drug money operating from Bush Sr., Kissinger, I'm sorry, I forgot the third person, and they put the initial funding together, and then if you check it out, it's called Clear Channel. The last I heard, and that was several years ago, they'd already bought up 1,250 stations in America to silence people exposing CIA mind control, the Illuminati, the Federal Reserve being owned by foreign bankers, who, of course, are Illuminati, and I've talked to an Illuminati man who confirmed that for me. I had a witness there. I always like to have witnesses with me because people would never believe the kind of interviews the Lord has put me in. Just, you run across the right people at the right time, or if somebody opens the door, you walk through the door because you know you're serving the Lord, and you find out all kinds of things. You just blow your mind. And so I give this background because, I'd gotten that Green Bomber speech by Dr. Hammond. Never thought I'd ever find him until I tried to find him on the internet. Couldn't find him. And bingo, somebody in Utah there, after I moved there, told me he's right there at the University of Utah. And so I thought, well, I checked it out. He was in the psychology department, or psychiatry, I'm sorry. And so I decided, okay, since he's trying to do a low profile, I'm going to wait until after the secretary goes home. I'm just going to walk in there and see if I can catch him, doing things, because a lot of people who are self-employed or hard-working people do a lot of work after things quiet down. And sure enough, I found him there, and I introduced myself to him and told him what I do and who I'm working with. He said, I told him I'm bringing Ted Gunnison up here to speak in about 10 days at a college campus here. We rented the room for a whole day. And we're going to be talking about the issues that you're exposing in the Green Bomber speech. Let's invite you to be a speaker. He said, that speech almost cost me my marriage. Please don't even tell. He said, I've dealt with Ted Gunnison a lot. He's a wonderful man. But please don't even tell me. You know where I am. So I'm out of that for at least a year. But anyway, and then when Ted came back up a second time just before we left, I did tell him that I saw Hammond and, I mean, he had a lot of respect for him. And, I learned about Ted Gunnison's name, former head of the FBI from Los Angeles. He started exposing these crimes, and he never had done it when he was in the FBI because J. Edgar Hoover had a list of things you could investigate if you were in the FBI. And so he said, we weren't allowed to investigate Satanism. And so, but as soon as he got out of the FBI, after serving for
27 plus years. He retired as a same pay scale as a general, same security, national security clearance as generals. In other words, he was qualified to go in and brief the president on national security issues. But you know, he did some of the right to rise to that point. And this is so sad we lost him last July 30th. And of course, he said, oh, he's got cancer, he's an old man. No. If you check it out on the internet, you can see, I encourage people to Google this. Then you go on YouTube, you'll find it. He met a doctor about 7 years ago and said, Ted, I see you've got purple fingernails. You've been poisoned by cyanide. And he was, and his webmaster told me he was with me at the time. Ted's face went totally white. He lost all the blood in his head. He was that traumatized by thinking that somebody had, you know, sprayed cyanide into his apartment. And so then he started checking around and found little particles of it spread around there, and also in his car. So he decided to move back to Nebraska, and he was so paranoid he didn't trust any of it. You know, but that, I mean, he was a wonderful person, one of a kind, and I had the guts to work with John DeCamp for 20 years exposing these things. So back, and so those two have been my mentors, of course, since I started this, because I learned about them around the 1st of August of 1992, just about three and a half months after I started investigating these things. But it was fascinating because Ted Gunderson's name is only in the book one time. And then DeCamp says that he made a statement that next to the three leading Satanists in the 19th century and the 20th century, which are aware, of course, Aleister Crowley. He liked to say Crowley because his pastor was a preacher in England. And he, of course, tortured and did human sacrifice by the thousands also. But he got his dues. He died with syphilis and insanity. Syphilis causes insanity, I would learn from that case.
I'm still having some trouble, Doug. I'm having a little trouble understanding you clearly there. You can repeat that again.
Okay, thank you for telling me that. Ted Gunderson states in John DeCamp's book in the front there, the introduction, that there are three worst Satanists in the 19th and 20th century were, number one, Aleister Crowley. He was a Satanist.
Barbara Bush's father.
Well, that's what they say. It's fascinating. You look at the jawline and the face of those two. I never could understand why a woman would look so weird as Barbara Bush does, but they say that, yes, the Satanist Crowley was Barbara Bush's father. And then the next person that Gunderson stated in DeCamp's book was, of course, the founder of the Church of Satan in San Francisco, and that's, of course, Anton LaVey from the Church of Satan. And then his number one high priest from 68 until 1975 was none other than Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino. And Gunderson has been quoted as saying, and in fact, even some of our enemies have quoted Gunderson saying that Ted Gunderson said that Doug Millar is the national authority on Aquino. And I guess the main reason is because I happen to be living in the San Francisco Bay Area, because I was investigating Satanism and learned about him and what he was doing, and because I met people who were his victims and were forced to do human sacrifices of children when they were only 6 years old, and little girls and little boys. Therefore, I was so incensed, I decided I was willing to risk my own life, but more importantly, I was willing to risk my children and my grandchildren's lives to expose someone because he was torturing and murdering so many people in Santa Rosa, in Sonoma County, where Bohemian Grove is, and throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. So it all ties back into how the CIA creates these Manchurian candidates to go out and kill people like these in the schools.
ironically, as I started to say today, I got a phone call from someone who was referred to me because he'd seen Ted Gunderson and me doing an interview together. And he was this man was so impressed with me, not the one that called, but somebody else. He said, since you're a victim of Keno, you're a victim of what happened in Omaha and all these sick people, where they had these sex parties and everything, not in Omaha, but, you know, in Washington, D.C. and nationwide. This man was referred to me, and he called me out of the clear blue. Normally, I don't even take a call if I don't recognize the number, because I get crank calls from time to time. I get threats occasionally, not very often, but I just figured I'd really take a call, let them go on the voicemail, find out who the person is, and then I know why I want to call them back, because I can't deal with all the phone calls. I only get a chance to look at 100 emails I get. It's frustrating. I miss lots of good things, but I'm just a one person, you know? So anyway, we've got this call today, and I ended up interviewing this man for a while, and then we got in the car, and there were three other people. Donna Taylor was in the car, Mark Taylor was in the car, and a friend that I won't disclose, somebody that you know, Terry. And so I had a good conversation with this man, and so we learned a lot of things. He said that he has been at a sex party in Omaha where George Bush Sr. was there. And he said the Bushes love to come to Omaha because they have off at Air Force Base there. They torture so many children and create abused children for mind control and all these different crimes the CIA uses these children for, that, excuse me, I'm sorry, I need to get some water. But the bottom line is that I just want to let you know that because of the fact that we have people coming forward now, and I hope you'll all write this name of this book down. He just released his book. His father was a Satanist working with the Keno, and his mother was a Satanist. They both died terrible deaths because of the crimes they committed, and therefore the Lord allows people to, die horrible deaths, often if they are armed children or commit atrocious crimes. And so he said, and I've seen two videos of his, and I won't give these out right now. I'd rather wait and have him on your show sometime, on my show, and we'll help him get his book out called The Rabbit Hole, H-O-L-E. And he's a homosexual because of what the Keno and his father did to him as a little boy. And once a man came to their house looking for his daughter, who disappeared in Omaha, and he said, my folks invited this man in, and then I'm not sure how they were able to do it. Somehow they got control of this person because he was investigating something. This man's parents, his name was David. David's parents had done to this child, and so they tied him up. And it's on this YouTube video, and he said, as a little child, I watched my daddy pour gasoline on this man, and my daddy forced me to light a match and torch the man in our home. And that's the kind of people that we have now running our government, with Democrats and Republicans, and people don't want to believe that. And so I'm not getting that anymore, but I can assure you, whether the Democrats or Republicans at the top now, we have the same kind of people running our government as the Bushes. So
I have to make this comment. It's understandable for me to think about Prince or King Philippe of France back in the 12th century, when he recognized that he was dealing with a bunch of Luciferians out of the Knights Templar.
Okay.
That he literally slow roasted a few of them. He killed about, I think it was something like 178 of them But he literally took the top leaders that he could get his hands on, and he slow roasted a couple of them. And when I hear you say things like you just said and recognize that it's the same families of people that have come forward through time that Philip was dealing with back in the 12th century, these people who came out of the Crusades, whose family lines can be traced all the way back to ancient Samaria, this has been going on for centuries. And we've just allowed this to happen in our country. We've allowed these people, these same families, these same Luciferians, to take over everything in our country, our entertainment, our media, our banks, and even our government and our judiciary. And it just fries me that we've stood by and allowed this to happen. We've allowed our kids to be brainwashed in government schools. We've allowed our television sets to become mind control operations.
Exactly.
And we keep turning it on. We keep hitting the switch on the thing because we're now a part of that mind control. We've become a part of it.
We sure are. And, you know, we've gone a full hour here now, and I hope we can get in call on mine since this is the 13th anniversary during the second hour, because we got some great people who want to share what's happened today, what happened yesterday, and what's happened to them in the last 13 years. We can go into this in more detail next time, but can we cover Columbine now?
Let's try to shift our focus a little bit.
Okay.
There's some things that you're aware of, some evidence about Columbine that's never really been brought out to the public. Can you
that's
talk about some of that now? Can you talk
okay,
about
sure.
that?
Right. As I mentioned, I was buying 5 newspapers a day, and the first day, it was a shocker. I read in one of those papers, and I figured it would be common knowledge when I got to Colorado, so I didn't even save the article, that the during that shooting incident, there was a helicopters flying around, and news helicopters would show 3 boys in camouflage fatigue pants standing with guns pointed at them for several hours in the field right next to the high school. Well, it turned out those 3 boys had just graduated from high school, but they were friends of the 2 killers. And they had known that the 2 killers were planning on doing this. And so they mentioned the fact that it was so really bizarre, but they had actually witnessed, let me think a lot here. I want to make sure that I'm talking about 2 different things here. Let me first tell you about the 2 students, the 2 killers, before they pulled their guns. Students gave police reports, and since I read this, this is the case I read in the papers. I didn't read the one about the 3 boys. I learned about their testimony to the police later. Let me correct that. The some students in high school saw the 2 killers before they drove on campus. They met with an older man who was not a student, and that was what I was looking for, suspecting, of course, that they had a handler. And therefore, when I got here to Denver, I thought that everybody would know about that case. And it's so bizarre because no one knew about it. I started having weekly meetings. The first week I had, there were 3 of us, including a cameraman and me. Second time I was, you know, passing out hundreds of flyers. We had 6 of us there. The next time we had over 40. We had more people in the restaurant, in the back room there, than the entire restaurant. I went to the restaurant at noon to see what kind of turnout they had. We had the biggest crowd, and yet they kicked us out. They said, we don't like your literature you have there. And so I said, well, I mean, we're trying to get justice for these children in Columbine. We don't care. Well, I said, why didn't you? I said, I just spent $20 on flyers and passed them out to these people and asked these people to spread the word, because I told you we're going to need a bigger room, so I'm asking for the other room. No, we're not going to give you the other room. We're kicking you out of here. I said, well, you know, how about let us come back one more time, because everybody's going to come here and they won't be able to find us because I won't be here and I'll be someplace else. No. I said, okay, I'm going to sue you for that $20. First I asked for the $20 back. He said he wouldn't give it to me. Well, so then I said, okay, I'm going to sue you for it and teach you a lesson, some business ethics. Well, I regret to say I was in a Venice barbecue, and the phone number at Venice barbecue ended with a 666. So when they saw our satanic literature, that's why they blamed the waiters and waitresses that were serving our 40 people there. Blamed it on them. They didn't want to see that satanic stuff. Well, I'm sure it was the manager that didn't want us to expose the satanic stuff. Because, well, think about it. Why would anybody have a business phone number or a street address or anything, cell phone number, whatever, with a 666 in it? It tells everybody what? You have the mark of the beast. That's the mark, right, in Revelations 13:18. So anyway, we never recovered from that because we had such momentum going. And then, of course, because we had the momentum going, then we started getting people attacking us, specifically me, claiming I was CIA, anything you were against or whatever. One guy said, he switched to, oh, you're not CIA, I made a mistake. You're FBI. You know, just in front of me, I confronted him about it. I was in Las Vegas. Why would you do that? You know you're lying about it. So anyway, it just goes on and on, and Gunnison became itself with the same kind of, you know, persecution and everything all these times too. But I've got to go back and get my charger in the other room. Mark and his mother have gone in the other room here, spending some quality time together because he's been captive of the government for the fifth time now. My charger. We're going to get
into the call and get here. Okay, I assume Donna's going to speak. Is she not? Is she ready to speak or?
Yes. Let's go back to the bedroom, Kat. We want to do it here. Okay, Donna's on the line right now.
This is Donna Taylor. Donna, welcome to Walls in Our Minds, and I just want to let the folks know that it was your son, Mark, that was one of the victims of Columbine and is still experiencing trauma in his life that is directly a result of that experience. And of course, that trauma spreads to the whole family. And I'm just very appreciative of having you here with us and that you're able to, you know, you've been very outspoken about this and you've been trying to get some things done. And we're thankful that you're able to come and visit with us tonight. So I'm going to give you the floor. And you're welcome. You're welcome to share anything you'd like to share. Donna, did we lose you? It sounds almost like the phone was muted. Well, Dwayne, you're there, and you have a live mic.
I'm on now.
Okay. Please.
Can you hear me now?
We hear you fine. You're loud and clear. It's very good to hear you.
Well, I want to be honest with you. Mark did pretty good right after he was shot at Columbine. For years, it was until we started going out and exposing the reason why Columbine happened that we got under the attack of him getting picked up and arrested and put into mental wards. With no court hearings, by the way, saying that he did anything wrong. And he's now, and I don't want to go through all of it, but five different ones he's been into. Now he's in another one here in Colorado, and I'm trying to get him out so I can go get him off of the drugs. But I really believe they drugged him so they could silence him. He knows too much about why Columbine happened. And I know for a fact that the boys were upset with the sheriff the day that they, you know, they did a diary saying that Well, it was the January incident is the reason why this was all happening. And if you Google January incident, these boys were messed with by police. I don't want to say the word, but
right. You're popping just a little bit. So maybe if you just slow down and take a little bit of a breath. And you said January incident?
Yeah, you can Google January incident. That was the main reason why the boys did the shooting at Columbine.
Can you give us a brief description of what that is?
Well, they were arrested because they broke into a van. And apparently the Sheriff Walsh had violated both of the boys. Because in the diary it says they took everything we had and went through the process. Okay. Then they drew a picture of, looked like they were messed with by cops. Right. Sheriff Walsh is the one that the boys were very, very angry about.
And this happened 15 months prior to the Columbine incident?
It did. Yes, it did. And, you know, I repeatedly have tried to get an investigation on that, and they won't even talk to us about it. We even went so far as giving it to Sullivan, and he wouldn't do anything about it. Now, you know the Sullivan sheriff just got arrested, right, for doing the same kind of thing?
Yes.
Arrestations. Uh-huh. Well, he wouldn't investigate nothing. On that situation. Right there?
Yes, you're doing fine.
But basically, the boys were raped and they won't investigate stuff like that. It's not about what they say, you know, the boys were after the jocks. It's not true. These boys were after the cops because of what happened to them. And if you look at ColumbineFamilyRequest.org, we have a film of Eric in the lunchroom, okay? And the boys were making fun of him in the lunchroom of that rape that they went through. So we have a videotape if anybody wants to take time to listen to it on ColumbineFamilyRequest.org. I'm completely convinced they were messed with by police. John DeCamp told me that we're on the right page. Okay, and he's getting ready to speak about it.
Donna, you're talking on Doug's phone right now, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I know that Dwayne's got a real bad connection, and he's wanting to hang up and call back in. He just wanted to make sure that you're not on his line. So,
no.
Dwayne, you're free. We don't have any echoes or anything here, Dwayne, so feel free to hang up and call back in. Sorry to interrupt you, Donna. You're doing great.
But basically, we need help for Mark. He's in a group home in Inglewood, Colorado, called the group home. And the courts have ordered him on the drugs. And court ordered. Now, he can leave for the day, but this is not the freedom of my son. My son never wanted to be drugged in the first place. Okay? And he did nothing wrong to deserve that other than the fact that I believe they're trying to silence him. And I was warned when he was locked up before by a court-appointed attorney that worked with the judge. She came out and said to me, if you ever get him out of here, you better run. She got real angry at me. If you ever get him out of here, you better just run. Well, I happened to have a friend with me, and she went and notarized that statement that judge said that to me, okay, in one of the places he went to. Another place, totally different, a doctor came out and said, you better run with him, they're going to hurt him. She wouldn't tell me who they were. But I've got that documented, and the person was with me heard that too. Okay? So I have witnesses on both ends of being threatened. Okay? And also, I was in the hospital with Mark up in Arizona, and a police sergeant lady came up to me and said, both of your lives in danger. And her name was Gina. Well, I never could get a hold of her again. That was the end of it. She said, well, I'm going to try to help you. She didn't try to help nothing. She didn't try to explain nothing or anything to me. So I've been threatened in three different places, plus the fact that Mark is now court-ordered under this, and I'm hoping that DeCamp just went ahead and said he would help me with it. So, and that's where we're at with it now.
Do you have any idea of the source of this intimidation?
know, I know it's very evil, and it has, it goes all the way to our government, like our governor's office and everyone, you know, any of them, Sheriff Stone, all of them are involved. Southers, I believe Southers is probably the one that's really involved.
The Attorney General?
Mm-hmm. Attorney General Southers, State Attorney General Southers.
And what specifically leads you to his front door?
I think what's happened is not only did we expose the drug company, but I believe that they used Mark in the very beginning when they brought 16 attorney generals in on our case and said that my son asked them to come in because he wants all the records viewed by a doctor that was at DU. We never proved that. They went and put 16 attorney generals with my son so that they could hide those basement tapes from us seeing them.
Okay, but
in
how does that point directly
at
John
from,
Southern?
Yes, and they wanted that doctor in DU to look over the records and tell the parents what they thought.
Were you
There's
saying
no
doctor
way I would
at
trust
D,
anybody.
Were you
He's
saying
a doctor
at
DU. A doctor
people,
of DU.
You got people talking behind you. I think they need to leave you alone so that you can speak.
Quiet. A doctor of DU college there in DU. He wanted to go ahead and look at all the basement tapes and tell the parents what he thought of them. It was going to be reviewed by him, okay?
Okay, the listeners don't know what
DU
is.
It was at Denver University, pardon me.
Yes,
but he wanted
you.
To look at the records, and they blame my son, saying that my son got these 16 attorney generals on the case with my son. So they're trying to make it look all legit, like that's what my son wanted. That's
okay,
why the 16 attorney generals jumped on.
You mentioned some tapes. What are these tapes?
These are basement tapes that probably tell everything there is to know about why this happened at Columbine, everything, and they've covered it up.
And
DeCamp has already seen this. And he can be, you know, when he gets the piece about getting on there and getting it done, he's going to do it because he promised me when I visited him he's going to do it. He's going to expose this. And he says, Donna, you're on the right page. They were violated by police.
So these tapes are tapes of the shooters?
Yes, and what happened to them. Everything was taped, what happened. In other words, these boys role-played everything that happened to them before and after, you know, before
okay.
they were raped. Like right when they were raped and then told that shooting, okay? There's a lot of tapes that we didn't see, and they covered those up. Now, I'm trying to get some documents now. Yeah, it's been 2 days now. I haven't heard from them. They were supposed to get the documents for my case, the Solvay case. Oh, yeah, they're there, but something's stopping them from calling me back and saying I can pick them up, okay? So I'll let you know, too.
I'm still curious how this leads back to John Southers' office.
Well, John Southers' office is now he's behind it all because I went to him and asked for investigations, and he shut the door. This has happened for a long time. I met him at a house, it was a Republican Party, I believe it was, picnic. And he was there, and I tried to explain to him what was going on, and he got so angry at me, he just pucked off and jumped in his car and took off out of the parking lot. He wouldn't even talk to me. I mean, I got no answers from him. Okay?
Yes.
As I can say with many others, too, I'm completely shocked that I can't get no help. And if I call the news, they don't want to help. They don't want to expose. They don't want to investigate. And it just keeps going round and round and round. Are you there?
Yes, I am. This treatment
On my website, following my family request, it mentions, you know how my son, when he was laying on the ground, he's seen rooftop shooters on top of the school. We're not talking a house. On top of the school. Well, if you go to my website, Columbine Family Request, you click it, you'll see a bunch of SWAT team people up there shooting up from the roof of that school. We have the footage on there. And yet we can go on a radio talk show and say, oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about. There was only one person up there. Well, I have the film. All you have to do is pull ColumbineFamilyRequest.org. So there's see the cover-ups, the lies, and the twisting and everything?
So I'm a little confused about what this video was showing from the top of the school.
The video was showing a bunch of SWAT people up there with guns shooting different angles. If you look at the film, you'll see it.
Who were they shooting?
Down towards the school. The rooftop of the school, they were shooting kids out there.
And was someone shot by
these? I was shocked when I seen it, too. Believe me, I just couldn't believe it when I seen it. But we have it on our website, seriously.
Was someone, who did they shoot?
Well, it could have been some of the kids outdoors they were shooting at, you know. I don't have any idea, but I know one thing, that Eric and Dylan, everybody was pre-warned. I mean, the Browns tried to call in and say, oh, you better be careful of them. And the police never would go out there because they knew that the kids were angry at them for what they'd done. So I don't have any clue why they would be doing that from the top of the roof. All I know is there's a lot of cover-ups and lies and stuff.
Okay, I don't know that how that fits into all the rest of the corruption, but I do understand that.
I'm just saying it needs to be investigated is what I'm saying. I'm going to try to figure it out. I can only tell you they said there's one person on the roof, and all I'm going to tell you is that if you pull that call my family request, you'll see quite a few men up on that roof. Not one person. And they're up with guns up there. Don't look like they're trying to fix a air conditioner, okay? I'm just saying, I'm not trying to make anything of it. It's just lies. And we need to find out why. That's what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're not saying that any of the victims of the students that were shot inside were shot by SWAT team. I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying there's been lies and cover-ups, and I think we need an investigation that we never have. I was never invited into any of the courtrooms for this investigation. I never met Sheriff Walsh, who should be investigated, because that's why the boys were mad. They wrote a diary on how angry they were at the sheriff. Do you think that sheriff showed up? I've never seen him at meetings. And you know what? We don't even know where he is today. Walsh.
It's my understanding, and I, you know, one of the things I haven't said is that I know people that were actually a part of that and other victims that have never come out to the general public and spoken. I have personal friends that were involved in that.
Right.
I haven't heard anybody ever say that anybody other than the two shooters were involved in shooting any of the other students.
I guess what I'm trying to tell, I don't know that either, but I can tell you one thing. We can't prove it, but I'm saying there was never an investigation why all those men on the roof, and I have the film. They won't explain that. They say, oh, there was this one person up there. Well, I want you to pull up Columbine Family Request and see the film that's on the roof of the school, the SWAT team. I want you to see it for yourself and see what you can find out if somebody wants to call in and explain that one.
I would expect that the SWAT team would be on the roof, but I'm not sure how that's relevant to the cover up or the fact that they haven't investigated.
They haven't investigated any of that. But when you say you think the SWAT team was up there, they're saying no. They're saying there's just a person out there fixing air conditioning. One person. I'm just trying to tell you something that doesn't fit. Okay.
Slow down a second. Mm-hmm. You're talking about SWAT team being on the roof. Are you talking about at the time that the shootings were going on or another time?
No, right then and there when the shooting was happening, exactly,
okay.
At that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Helicopter.
A helicopter camera. But you know, I'm not talking about the roof of the house. I'm talking about the roof of the school. And if you pull up Columbine Family Request on see the film coverage. I put it on there, you know. It's just real simple. I'm questioning it because they said, oh, it's just a, I've asked them, oh, no, just a janitor up there. And I'm thinking, here's all these guys up there, and they're trying to tell me it's just a janitor. They ignore that. I don't ignore something that I have. It doesn't go with their story is all I'm saying. But the fact that they never investigated Columbine and they've covered it up and put it away so nobody could look at it, it's amazing. to me.
Okay. I'm thoroughly convinced that there's a lot of stuff that's been covered up. I'm thoroughly convinced that these the sheriff and the other people that were involved have not brought out a lot of information that could incriminate them.
That's right.
We're getting a lot of noise now from the background. I'm not sure where that's coming from.
Oh, I don't hear noise. Okay.
Yeah, so if somebody's not speaking and you've got an open phone, please mute yourself.
Okay,
it went away. Good.
No, I don't have it now. Do you hear it now?
No, it went away. So whoever was the source of it muted themselves, I'm sure. We've got a number of different people that have live mics on the phone right now.
But I basically what I want is an investigation and not being shoved in the corner and not listened to. And they, believe me, you've got all different kinds of people writing books of what they think it is. I mean, you've got this guy, Cohen, what's his name, Cohen, trying to write a book, and all these different movies they're doing, which is completely off base. What we really need is an investigation, get the truth out, not this guessing games that people are doing. But I think, like DeCamp told me, we're on the right page. He was there, and he was gag ordered. So we'll find out what he has to say.
Well, just the mere fact that he comes out, and I wish he was here with us. I thought he was going to be on the call tonight.
I thought so, too, because today I talked to him this morning. He said, thank you. He says, I'm doing so much better, and on and on. I said, well, can you come on radio? And he says, well, just tell him to call me. Well, who knows?
When we called him after the show began, we got his voicemail, and then when we tried to call again, his voicemail is full.
Oh,
so we're not reaching him, and he wasn't answering the phone. So
well,
I hope
you know
he's, what
I'll
do, I hope he's listening.
Him. Yeah, he is. I think he's just getting ready to do what he's got to do with that. I can imagine he's on a lot of pain pills, though. But you know what? He basically, I know he's not joking. But he said he's going to spill the beans on it. He's going to talk, and he said that we were on the right page. The boys were, you know, hurt by the sheriff. The sheriff, especially the one, Tim Walsh. So I don't know what to say other than, he's been gag ordered for years. And I know in his Franklin cover-up book it said that he's gonna expose it someday, Columbine.
Well, it needs to be exposed, and it needs to be exposed now. And I don't understand how somebody can be given a gag order to keep information from coming out unless there's an ongoing investigation that's active. And it seems to me that this is a cold case and nobody's investigating it today. So what would be the purpose? What would be the purpose of that gag order other than to conceal information about officials that should be investigated themselves? This needs to be taken to a grand. This needs to be taken to a grand jury. I don't know that if a grand jury could subpoena him. I don't believe that gag order would apply to a grand jury.
I don't think it would either, and I think DeCamp needs maybe some encouragement for anybody out there that has knowledge of this. You know, if anybody's listening that may know some other law attorneys that know what could be done, or if they can give him some, you know, help in this, so that he can feel more secure when he exposes. I know he said he was going to, but he's hesitating. I don't. It could be for his own life and protection.
So Donna, what can we do at this point? I know that you've done numerous efforts. You've tried to figure out different ways to bring this to the light again, because obviously after 20 years, there's a lot of people out there that just get bored hearing the same thing over and over.
I know.
20
I
years anniversary of Columbine.
Over over.
I mean, some people are like, some people's attitude is like, well, you know, 20 years ago, good grief, let it go.
The problem is
that they don't realize how this is happening all over the country time and time again, and it's tied into exactly what's destroying this nation today. It's the same people that are destroying this nation today. The people people want to excuse us as a conspiracy as being something that's fictitious or made up in somebody's mind. Well, a conspiracy is when there's a group of people that are doing unlawful things, and we know for a fact that there's a big conspiracy out there because there's a lot of Luciferian people out there that are continuing the crimes that those families have been conducting for centuries now that are continuing to do it today. And these are the people that want to be worshipped like gods and want to have a global, not just a global government, but a global religion. And that religion will not include the God that you and I worship.
That's exactly right.
So there's a lot of good people out there. There's a lot of good people out there in churches that need to recognize that this is something that is against God. And if they continue to allow it to go on, they're going to pay a price for it. We're already paying a price for it.
Well, it's going to hit everyone. You know, it's not just me, my family. It's going to hit everywhere. And you know, like you keep seeing these school shootings, they're not going to stop either. If we don't get to the bottom of the truth of this school shooting. You see? They're all trying to copycat, thinking that, oh, it's jocks. Oh, we want to get the jocks. Huh. If you look in the report, it says they were after the cops. Okay? That's the main one they were after, is the cops. So, there's never been an investigation, and they never asked me any questions about the shooting. Nor did they take anything down about what I knew or what my son knew. They never reported anything. Okay? So if there was really a shooting and we're victims, don't you think they would be asking us and taking that down as a report?
Well, not if they're covering it up.
That's right. You got it. And right now I need help with my son. I need to figure out where I can go with him to get him off this drug. Once the camp gets him out of the group home that he's being drugged in, where I can get him off these drugs. And yeah, I'm a mother with no money, so how do I go about that when he's on Medicaid? So that's a big thing. It's a big challenge.
Now, I heard, I don't know if it was Doug or you earlier, that was talking about the fact that Eric and Dylan had been ridiculed by some of the other students, specifically in regard to the sexual abuse that they had suffered at the hands of the police.
Yeah, exactly. And that goes into deep. Let me tell you something. If you go to my website, we have the film on there, and you can listen to what Eric was going through in the lunchroom and how his friends were making fun of him and role-playing what happened. So I could go and talk a whole hour about that, but a moment.
In one sense that you were jacked in the butt.
You were jacked in the butt. It's right on the film. He got angry. He hit the table, was angry, you know, that kind of thing.
This would explain why they took out their anger on the students and not directly toward the police.
They wanted both of them, but yeah, they were angry at the students for what being made fun of. Of course. Of course they were, but you got to remember they were on, one of them was on antidepressants that I know of, and that was Eric. I don't know if Dylan was, but they both went into counseling, so I'm not real sure about that. Other than I met a gal that knew Dylan, and she said he was taking Prozac, but we got to have more information than that to prove it. It's just Eric that was on the drug, the antidepressant. But basically,
now, the parents were deposed, were they not?
Yeah, they were silenced. We never met them. My family never met them. We never talked to them at all.
But they've been deposed, not just by the police, but by others.
Yeah, nobody ever talks to them or heard from them. You know, they've always been pulled away from the case.
Has any of that information that came out of those questioning those parents, has anything come out about that has not been released to the public that you can discuss?
You're exactly right, and I think John DeCamp would have that information.
Well, how about Doug? Does Doug specifically have any of that information?
Have any information on the parents, what they said? Hang on.
I'm sorry, information on the parents regarding what?
Information that the parents were aware of or that they have talked about to anyone that has not been, that has not come out or been allowed to come out.
No, of course they were obviously had legal counsels separate for each family, and they were told never talk to the media, never talk to anybody, and so they were very closed mouth. But we do know this, that Eric Harris, the who was the leader of the two, when he was in junior high school in New York, his dad was a test pilot for Air Force planes. But for some odd reason, he made a statement, Eric Harris did, to some of his classmates, that he is a victim of CIA mind control. And but we were never able to track that down and verify it by finding somebody who said that. But we do know this, that his father, being an Air Force test pilot, why would he be in an airplane at an air base that had been shut down for 2 years? Doesn't make any sense unless the whole family were under mind control. And I'll tell you this. Remember when Gary Powers was shot down under the Eisenhower administration over Russia on May Day? Do you remember that case?
I'm having trouble understanding you again.
Okay. Do you recall, I think you're too young to remember this, but when Eisenhower was president, he was embarrassed by the fact that a CIA spy plane was shot down by the Russians on May Day, founding day of the Illuminati, founding the most important day in Russia, because, of course, the Russian government is nothing more than a puppet state of the Illuminati. And so my point is, my wife and I, we were in Anchorage when President Eisenhower, we were standing on the street that was on 6th Avenue waiting for President Eisenhower to come by because he was flying from Washington, D.C. through Anchorage to Russia. And so he was going to make a public appearance. And all of a sudden, we were standing there for half an hour and he never showed up. Come to find out, one of the reasons he never showed up is because America was embarrassed by the fact that this CIA spy plane was shot down over Russia on May Day. And so I bring this up because of the fact that the pilot was Gary Powers, and his job was, if he got caught for any reason, he had cyanide in his one of his jewelry. I think it was a ring, as I recall. He was supposed to pop that and take it right away so that they would never be able to torture him and find out what he was all about. Well, I give you this background because it's so significant. I met a lady in Washington, D.C., 2 weeks before Polly Klass was kidnapped from our county as retaliation for us exposing Aquino as mind control. And what happened was that she said that she was in a daycare. She was a victim of CIA mind control, you know, child sex slavery and all this stuff. And she said that she was in the daycare owned by Gary Powers' mother. And she was a victim of this stuff, too. And so that made sense to me, that they would use people with multiple personalities to fly the test pilots as test pilots, because if they ever got caught, they're so compartmentalized, they could be tortured and they never disclose any of the secrets of the plane. That's pretty bizarre, huh?
Well, yeah, but I'm struggling to understand how that ties back into what these parents might have known that they've talked about in deposition. Or
that's a good question. We see because DeCamp got the depositions, and he went back to his hometown, which was at that time, of course. Can we please stop the noise back there, Don? Please ask.
Wait a second, Doug. Doug, were the parents aware that their kids had been sodomized?
I'm confident they were, but of course the deposition would disclose that. But the problem is we will never find out until John DeCamp releases. See, he made copies of everything. Okay. He had too many problems with the CIA and the FBI for, at that point, for well over a decade since he started investigating the Franklin cover-up. So therefore, Johnny Camp, according to Ted Gunderson, is the shrewdest attorney Gunderson ever saw in court any place in the nation. So yes, he made copies of it.
If he's got a gag on him, what's the purpose of that gag? Who's that gag protecting? It's not protecting the general public.
No, it's protecting the sodomites that basically are running our country. So you see, we have a big problem here, Terry and the audience, that there's lots of people who are sodomized as children, have multiple personalities, and especially these men, they know that they can't be successful unless they have a wife and children, so they go out and get married, have children, but their preference is not sex with their wife, it's being sodomized and sodomizing other people. That's what's going on. It's well documented.
We've got about 18 minutes left. I'd like to get my other co-host here, Red Beckman and Dwayne Moore, in if they've got any questions or a direction that you'd like to go here. Guys, please jump in at this point. I think you both got live mics.
Well, I don't really have anything as far as questions. I would like to hear a little bit from Mark, actually, and Red, do you have any questions?
I'll get him.
Hi. Mark's coming here. He's on his way. Just a moment.
Let me introduce Mark here, okay?
Okay.
This is very important for you to understand. Mark Taylor was the most articulate, outspoken person, not just of a victim, but he was not more outspoken about what happened at Columbine, seeking the truth, than any parent at Columbine, anybody in law enforcement. And that's why there's no question in my mind when he came up to John the camp, that's why they targeted Mark when he started speaking out. And because they drugged him so much and held him in incarcerated so many times, five times in two different states in many different institutions, he's drugged right now. He took seven pills tonight, five different kinds, just before the show started the show. So here's Mark Taylor.
Hello. Mark, let me say welcome to Walls in Our Minds. And
thank you.
Very appreciative to hear your voice, and we've got about 17 minutes left, and you can take that whole time if you like. So please feel free to share with us whatever you have on your mind or heart.
You want to tell them what happened?
Well, I was shot outside the school, as you know. I'm still suffering from the wounds. From that day, and doctors said that I'll probably have arthritis for the rest of my life from the bullet wound. Hello?
Yes.
So,
you're doing fine.
I'm on five different prescription drugs, which I don't think I should be on them because they make me sick. I almost threw up tonight.
Yeah,
taking them. So
it's been represented, Mark, that you know way too much.
I don't know about that.
what do you feel comfortable telling us about what really happened? From your perspective?
Well, there's not much to it. I was outside praying with friends.
Three Mormons.
Yeah, three Mormons. And I was witnessing to them when this whole thing happened. It was about time when I was getting up off the ground. I got struck in the leg. That was the first shot. And then I got shot several times in the chest. They're not sure how many. They can't tell by the tracks of them.
So God obviously brought you through a very harrowing experience for some reason. You know, he wanted you to be able to share your story. And tell us a little bit about that day, you know, what you were going through. Were you unconscious at that point after you were shot in the chest, or were you conscious of what was going on?
Well, I kept myself awake because if you get shot, you don't want to put yourself asleep. You'll go into a coma. And so I made sure that I stayed awake, and then they gave me morphine shots when I was in the ambulance. And they had me on morphine where I could just push the button myself and it would shoot the morphine in. Kids think that guns are all games and fun. And I say that guns are dangerous. They shouldn't be toyed with like a toy. People should take it serious. They should have a class in each high school, a gun awareness class, to talk about gun safety. And I think that would help. I think that would help with the shootings, help get those ratings down on the shootings.
Mark, did your knowledge about Eric and Dylan precede the shooting, or did you learn things after?
I just started going there a week before it happened. I just started going there, so I didn't know anyone. I only knew these two kids, Mike Johnson and another guy. And so, Yeah, it just happened that I got shot and they got shut down. I'm in more pain now than I was when I got shot.
So how did you come to learn a lot of the things about what's going on? How did you come to learn that after being shot?
What have I come to learn? I sued the drug company. Because we found out from through depositions, Eric Harris's psychiatrist said that he was doing really well off the medications. He wasn't having any tooth on. But then they put him on a different medication called the Zoloft. Or the Luvox. And he was having suicidal thoughts from that. So I most definitely, could say that drugs can be an accomplice to shootings. The courtroom won't do anything unless if you actually hire an expert. From what I heard from my lawyer, in order to sue the drug company, what you'd have to do is you'd have to hire a scientist that works for them, or a scientist that's worked on drugs. You'd have to hire a scientist in order to take it to court in order to win a case against them. Otherwise, you can't win the case.
Okay. You're obviously still in a lot of pain, as you said. Is this preventing you from being able to earn a living or have a career? Or what's the level?
Well, I've been in a group home here, and then I was in a group home down in Arizona. But the firemen came and arrested me and put me in the hospital. Not cops, but firemen.
That's odd.
Yeah. Under what authority?
I didn't know they had that kind of authority. monsters come in and break into your house. And
they broke into your house?
Yeah, they didn't knock at all. They just came right in.
And what prompted them to come and do that?
I have no idea. I don't know why.
They didn't give you a reason?
No, they didn't give me a reason. They took me to the hospital.
Was this in one of the group homes or at home, at your own home?
It's a group home. I'm in a group home now, right now.
Were you the only one? Were you the only one they came in and got?
Huh? What's that?
Were you the only one that they came in and arrested?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting. And to this day, you still don't know why they did that?
No, I don't.
Do you folks have the paperwork that they provided with paperwork as to why they did that, Mark?
Did the group home call them in for some reason?
No, I don't think group home called them in.
Okay.
I think they just came, got me. Yeah, so we would say a little prayer for me.
Yeah.
Did I get out safely from this one, from this group home? I'm allowed to go with my mom for 10 days, but.
So you're still participating in a group home situation now?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners tonight?
No, that'd be it. Thanks for talking to me.
You're welcome, Mark.
Do you want to talk to you?
Let's talk to Donna for a moment, your mom.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, Donna.
Yeah, Mark's a little bit lucid, but he's telling what he feels in his heart. But basically, I believe it was a cover-up because he told me a long time ago the first time they picked him up. He says, Mom, it was a setup. So, right now, he you know, you got to realize he's being counseled and maybe brainwashed not to talk too much. You understand that?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think once he's off these drugs, he'll be able to talk a lot more, you know?
What are they holding
him for? How do you go about...
They have him on Clozapin. They have him on a psychotic drug called Clozapin, Clozapin. 150 milligrams.
What's keeping him in the group home?
They say that he's schizo, but he's not.
The doctors are saying that he's got schizophrenia?
Right, but I have proof. I have an attorney that got him out of Arizona. I've got proof that it was all a big game so they could keep him to make money off of him. My attorney, Wesley Hoyt, has all the documentations of what happened in Arizona. And he literally caught them in all kinds of fraud in the courts. For example, they said they couldn't find me and didn't know where his mother was, and they knew where I was. Within 24 hours, they subpoenaed me to court, but they told my attorney they didn't know where I was. Okay?
Yeah.
And that they couldn't get a hold of his father, but didn't know where we were at. And they were almost going to, he's going to be a ward of the state in Arizona. Okay?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it would have been it. But he's in Colorado, and we have visitations, but he's still a ward of the state in Colorado because Arizona made darn sure when he got to Colorado it was going to stick that way.
Donna, we've got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what the most productive way we can spend that 5 minutes is.
Well, I need help with Mark. Anybody wants to help me with Mark would be gratitude. If anybody wants to come on and help the camp because he's not well. He took the case, but he needs help. Anybody in Colorado that would step up to the plate and help John DeCamp is what we're looking for. And any place that would help out financially to help Mark get off the drugs is our wishes. Once we get him freed, you know, hopefully that happens.
I take it the group home is doing very little in that way.
Exactly. They will not take him off the drugs, and his wishes is to be off the drug. You know, the doctor was supposed to take him off the drugs, and on purpose he took him off it. Like, he took him off in 2 months, which should have taken at least 8 or 10 months to come off the clozapine. Mark was on 400 milligrams, and that doctor was not available, and Mark's blood test was not good. Oh, you're just going to have to wait till next week. Well, guess what? That week, that day or two later, Mark's son ended up in the hospital almost in a coma. I mean, he had a seizure. He went out. He couldn't talk. He couldn't walk. He couldn't eat. He couldn't drink, and he couldn't go to the bathroom.
Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes left.
Anybody can help me. I seriously want help. I'm begging for help. Anybody can help Jen DeCamp.
Let me ask some specific questions, please.
I can give you my number if you want my phone number. Go ahead.
Let me ask some specific questions, please.
Mm-hmm.
How many drugs are you taking, and for what specific purpose?
They're saying he is schizo, and they got him on schizophrenia, right? And they got him on clozapine. I do not know the other drugs they have him on.
Did he get any head wounds?
No. Mark was fine after Columbine. He was a pronounced speaker for years. It
so
wasn't until we spoke at the Federal Drug Administration and we went to the drug we sued the drug company that we have these problems.
Does he have any swelling of the brain?
No. 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 He was shot in the heart area and he never had any problem in that area. When he says he has pain, it's usually in his back area where he was shot. Sometimes he gets a little pain. Okay,
so then there's not, these drugs are not for physical conditions.
No.
These drugs are for psychological conditions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I know it was a setup to set him up so he can't talk. I know that for sure. I've been warned from the attorney. The court-appointed attorney in Arizona told me to run with him if I got him out.
So
she wouldn't tell me why.
Being off of the drugs would not create a physical problem for him.
Absolutely not. If we can get somebody out there to get him off of clozapine and help him get well and get him on some good nutrition, Mark will be so happy. So happy not to be on these drugs. And they put him on him and they mislabeled him and everything else. Now, I'm working with a gal named Jeanette Parker. And she's went through all the documents, and she can almost assure you for sure that Mark is not mental. Because if he was in Bowling for Columbine, he was normal. He was on news all over the place and speaking in front of thousands of people with no problems. Okay? And then if you pull up ColumbineFamilyRequest.org, you'll see all some of the failings he did where he was normal. And then you'll see him drugged where he can't hardly talk, just like tonight he couldn't say a whole lot.
Well, I have posted that. I have posted ColumbineFamilyRequest.org, that website, in our chat room tonight a couple of times, and we've got it out there, and people will be able to listen to this archive of this show, and they'll be able to get that as well. We are about out of time, and I would like to close this in a prayer. Is that okay?
Yes, I appreciate that. Yes.
Thank you, and thank Mark, and thank Doug for joining us tonight. Thank you, Dwayne. Let's close in prayer, all right?
All right.
Father God, we just lift up Mark to you specifically tonight. We ask for your healing hand to be on him. And we ask that you bring the assistance that his mom, Donna, has requested to help him get free of the drugs. But we also ask for a hedge of protection around them, that they not be intimidated or harassed by the Luciferians that are out there. And we pray that the truth continue to come out about the Columbine incident, But, Father, we know that there's a much greater spiritual battle that this is just one little piece of. And we pray, Father, that you would come in a powerful way here in this Denver and Colorado area and clean house. We pray that your spirit would clean house here to protect those that are being persecuted by those who do not want you in control. And I pray for Donna's anxious heart, that you would strengthen her through all of this. She's a very strong woman, obviously, to have survived this. And we know that you don't bring people more than they can handle. And we just pray for your protection and healing. And we pray all of this in the name of your Son, Yeshua, Jesus the Christ. Amen.
Amen. So keep in touch with me, and don't be afraid to call anybody that can help. Don't be afraid. I'm going to say, fear not. Fear not.
We'll be in touch.
Thank you. Thank you.
See everybody next Thursday night for Walls in Our Minds.
Okay, night.
Night, Dwayne. Night, Doug. Night, Red. Night, Kate. And now let Satan have one more. What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise, and stormed hell's rusty gates? What if his people prayed? And those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way, then maybe kids in school could play and unborn children do life day. What if the life that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his what if his people prayed?